I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Welcome back to Radio Times. If you go to a rally for Hillary Clinton, chances are you're going to hear Rachel Platten's fight song blaring from the speakers.
This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove them all right song. My power's turned on. Starting right now, I'll be strong. I'll play my fight song. And I don't really care if nobody else believes. Cause I've still got a lot of fight left in me.
Donald Trump's unofficial campaign theme song is We're Not Gonna Take It by Twisted Sister.
We'll fight the powers that be just. Don't pick our destiny cause. You don't know us, you don't belong. We're not gonna take it. No, we ain't gonna take it. We're not gonna take it anymore.
Well, it's become a tradition for candidates to pick music to fire up their supporters. We're also interested in their more private, personal music tastes and what, if anything, they reveal about their personality and how they might govern. We asked Rob Sheffield to join us, a columnist for Rolling Stone, author of many books on music, including Love is a Mixtape and One Song at a Time. He's got an upcoming book called On Bowie. Rob Sheffield, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hey, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Also with us is David Graham. He's joining us by Skype, a staff writer for The Atlantic. He covers U.S. politics and culture. David Graham, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you for having me.
David, let me begin with you. And we just played two themes from the campaigns of Clinton and Trump. Do you think campaigns need a theme song or candidates need a theme song if they're running for president?
I don't know that they need a theme song, but it seems to work well for them. And I think you get into a rhythm. People really expect to hear the Trump playlist when they go to see him. And you get a similar effect for Clinton. If there's no fight song, I think people don't know what to expect and they don't know when the candidate's coming on stage. So it's sort of like wrestling intro music.
What do you think, Rob?
It is a lot like wrestling. It has a lot to do with branding the candidate, marking their personality, and making kind of more populist connection to the audience.
How much you think, Rob, this stuff is taste tested, if I can put it that way, or focused group when they come up with these theme songs that we associate with campaigns?
It's hard to say. So much thought is put into them. In the right moment, they become really resonant and they become really well known. Everybody remembers from the 92 campaign when Clinton and Gore, when Fleetwood Mac's Don't Stop became such a huge part of their campaign, and it became a song that they were pretty much stuck with whether they liked it or not.
How about for you, David?
I can't hear that song without thinking about the Clinton campaign, so that's exactly right. And I think the Clinton ones are carefully thought out. The Trump one seems to be music that Trump likes, you know, so Not Gonna Take It as kind of a natural song for an insurgent campaign. But he's also got like El Sole Mio and Phantom of the Opera, and You Can't Always Get What You Want. And it's kind of just like the things that Trump seems to like. He has apparently personally decided the playlist.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Dave, because I heard You Can't Always Get What You Want at some of these Trump rallies. I thought, well, that's an interesting choice. Or Sympathy for the Devil. That was another one I heard. I thought, well, that's an interesting choice. What do you make of that, David? And then to you, Rob.
I'm just not sure that there's that much. It has been thought through that much. I think these are songs that he likes, and they're songs that, you know, a sort of older crowd, it's a boomer crowd, and he thinks it'll appeal to them. I'm not sure that the meanings of the lyrics has come through so much. And we saw that when he began his campaign with Neil Young's Rockin' in the Free World, which is not really exactly amenable to his political point of view.
Rob, anything you want to add? Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, he might as, for Rolling Stone songs, he might as well have picked Jimmy Shelter. And You Can't Always Get What You Want is not the most soothing, uplifting of Stone songs. It's a very hard weather bitten song, and it seems weird. It's just a weird selection.
Well, we went through a list, some of it from Rolling Stone, some of it from other news outlets about what these various candidates like to listen to on their iPod or what's on their playlist. And it's pretty clear that Hillary Clinton likes female singers. So we're going to play Selena Gomez's first big hit is called Come and Get It, an example of the teen pop that Hillary Clinton's claims to love often uses for campaign themes. Let's give it a listen. Do you like that song, Rob?
It's not one of my favorite Selena Gomez songs. It's kind of from her early work.
Do you think it tells us anything about Hillary Clinton?
Well, it's a song that sort of it screams usefulness. It's a song that the way it's produced and engineered, it's almost like it's designed to be abrasive to parents, as pop music always is, or often is. And so it's a strange selection because it's not really inclusive on a multi-generational level. It's a song that says that either you're a fan of this kind of teen pop or you're not.
And abrasive to their parents, why?
Well, because it's just in terms of the sound of it, it's very very shrill, very, very high end. It doesn't have the sort of mellow ballady feel that that candidates often go for.
What do you hear in this, David, and what do you make of it?
So I think Rob's point is well taken, and that's one reason I'm a little bit skeptical that in her free time Hillary is bumping from Selena Gomez. I think that this is, you know, there's a sort of confluence between her supporters and the music. So you see people like Katy Perry out campaigning for her. You see Selena Gomez. You see Ariana Grande. And I think for Clinton, this is her way of sort of reaching out to younger women. And there's a kind of interesting feminist confluence, you know, between these women who look up to Clinton as a role model, they say. And so she's happy to play their music at her events.
Well, and David, not to get overtly political here, but as we know, this presidential race is so much about who women are going to vote for. This is the fight that we're in currently.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's a good reason for her to play songs like this.
Now, we mentioned Donald Trump, his theme song, Twisted Sisters, We're Not Going to Take It. Rob, we did a little digging, and apparently Donald Trump has claimed to love Neil Young, especially his early records. Let me play. This is it's actually Southern Man from Young's 1970 album, After the Gold Rush. That's Neil Young, Southern Man. Let me quote something from Rolling Stone here. Trump was spotted at a 2006 Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young concert in New York, where he was seen talking with fellow concert attendee Salman Rushdie. I'm just trying to absorb that sentence. Afterward, he told Rolling Stone of Young, he's got something very special. I've listened to his music for years, and I've seen him before that, but I went to the concert where they were honoring Bob Dylan years ago at Madison Garden, and Neil got up and totally brought the house House Down, There Was Nobody Close. He performed for me at my casinos, and he goes on from there. So, Rob, what should we make of this, if anything?
Well, it's a mighty strange pick. It's definitely it's a guy who is choosing to play it at his campaigns, a song by a Canadian rock star complaining about how American Southerners are all racist. Not the most deftly regionally sensitive touch. This is a song that famously inspired Lynyrd Skynyrd to write their answer songs, Sweet Home Alabama. It's a very regionally strange choice.
You know what, and we're going to play lots more music, David, but what I noticed in all the songs, or many of the songs that we picked out, it's really when you hear the lyrics, they really don't line up with the person who says that they really love this music. It's more about the actual music, perhaps the rhythms, the arrangements, whatever.
And the emotional resonances. You know, they're often songs that correspond to a certain generation or time, but yeah, you get the sense that nobody's really paying attention to what the songs really say.
What's on your playlist? I'm curious, David. Do you have one?
For the election in particular?
Well, or? Just for you yourself.
It's pretty wide. I tend to be on a lot of jazz and sort of Americana, but really anything.
Anything. How about for you, Rob?
Well, like everybody, I'm listening to a lot of Bob Dylan this morning. but what David said about Americana is a very well-taken point, because it points at something that's really very interestingly absent from both campaigns, is country music, which usually is something that candidates are following all over each other to embrace. It's a really strange to see a Republican nominee, especially with no interest at all in country music.
What do you? That's such an interesting comment, David. Let me toss that back to you because you cover politics and culture. Is there something significant about that?
I think that's exactly right. You know, Republican candidates in particular always play a lot of country, and that includes the candidates who don't seem particularly Southern fried. You know, Mitt Romney would play a lot of country at his rallies, and he doesn't seem like the type. But it's more of an identifying with tribe sort of thing. And this is a way in which Trump seems to disobey the kind of Republican dogma. He has no interest in playing those things. It's just not up his alley. And so he doesn't do it. And he breaks the mold.
Do you think Southern supporters are in any way insulted by that or have questions about that? Or are we beyond that, David?
At the Trump events I have been to, all of which have been in the South, no one has complained about it to me. They seem pretty fired up anyway.
Well, let's take a very short break and we'll get back to our conversation. That's David Graham. He's a staff writer for The Atlantic. He covers U.S. politics and culture. Also with us is Rob Sheffield. He's a columnist for Rolling Stone. He's written a number of books about music. He's got an upcoming book called On Bowie. And in this hour of Radio Times, we're talking about and playing selections of music that either political candidates or elected officials say that they like. And there's some surprising picks in here. You can join our conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And stay with us. A message here. Your staff wonders, Marty, what's on your iPod? I'll tell you right after this very short break. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking about some of the music that Hillary Clinton says she loves. Teen pop, who knew? Donald Trump is apparently a classic rock guy. Paul Ryan is a fan of Rage Against the Machine. We'll be talking about that. President Obama released his playlist for night and day listening at the end of the summer. And I have to say, some of it is pretty steamy stuff. Since you asked what's on my iPod, I haven't updated this in a number of years now, but it does include Frank Zappa, Sweeney Todd, Urinetown, Dixie Chicks, Elvis Costello, and then really loud music that my son recorded when he was in high school and college and in a bunch of different bands. So there you go. You can join our conversation at 1-888-477-9499. Let me play Vice Presidential candidate Tim Kaine. He said his favorite album is Let It Be by The Replacements from 1984, and this is their song Unsatisfied. Look me in the eye, then tell me that I'm satisfied. David Graham, if that's a Rorschach, what does that tell us about Tim Kaine?
It doesn't really seem like a calculated political choice, is my guess. I think it tells us maybe something about generations, you know. Given all the dad jokes about Tim Kaine, I thought maybe we would get a Wilco pick or something. But, you know, he's of the age, and I think that's the sort of alternative stuff that he came up listening to.
What do you think, Rob?
Yeah, it's a song that, like you said, it doesn't feel like a calculated choice. It feels like fan enthusiasm. He's a real hardcore fan of a band that was certainly not famous in their time, more of a populist legend than a band. And it gives a sense of the personality he wants to project really well.
What do you think that tells us about him? Again, this is, you know, going out on a limb here, Rob, but what do you think that tells us about Tim Kaine?
Well, it's an unpolitician-y choice for the unpolitician-y persona that he likes to project. Another artist he's talked about is the indie rock singer-songwriter Lucy Dacus, who is brand new, and that's a surprisingly hip pick for a guy of Tim Kaine's age. It's something that it shows some kind of genuine fan enthusiasm rather than something that feels focus grouped.
Interesting. Well, let me get some callers in and then we'll play some more music. Looks like we have James from Malvern joining us on Radio Times. Hi, James. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Good.
Didn't a couple of people ask Donald Trump not to play some thing at his rally, like Neil Young and Bruce Springsteen and maybe a couple more? I think that says a lot about the candidate, too. I mean, I can't imagine Perry and Selena Gomez asking Hillary, please don't play my stuff at your rally. So I just wanted to remind them of that, see if they have any feedback.
James, let me put your question to David Graham, kind of a fuzzy phone there, wanting to know whether some of these artists have asked Trump not to use their music. I know there have been previous candidates where musicians have really objected to their using their music. What do we know about Trump and some of this music?
Yeah, Neil Young very publicly demanded that Trump stop using Rockin' in the Free World, which is something that he can say, although legally, I think if Trump pays for the rights, he can do it. It just kind of looks bad. The Rolling Stones said that they didn't like Trump using "You Can't Always Get What You Want," but they didn't have much recourse. Let's see. Mike Huckabee used "Eye of the Tiger" earlier this year, and he got some objections on that. So you see a lot of these cases, particularly with conservative candidates who tend to be to the right of the musicians, getting backlash when they play these songs.
Well, let me play Vice Presidential Candidate Mike Pence. He says he loves John Mellencamp. This was a piece we saw in the New York Times. I'm just quoting here. He said, "I'm a big fan of John Mellencamp. My politics are considerably different, but man, the guy can rock." So we picked out Authority song from Mellencamp's 1983 album, Uh-Huh. That's John Mellencamp, Authority song, and Vice Presidential Candidate Mike Pence says he loves John Mellencamp. What do you make of that, David Graham?
Well, you'll note that they share a home state, just as Lucy Dacus shares a home state with Tim Kaine. I think there's a little bit of a home state and hometown sort of connection there.
He also says, one of my favorite songs is Bless the Broken Road by Rascal Flatts. As an evangelical Christian from college days, I also enjoy contemporary Christian music. And he goes on from there. He also likes the soundtracks to Braveheart and Saving Private Ryan. Rob, you want to weigh in on that at all?
That feels more like a smart, focus grouped strategic picks. I mean, there aren't a lot of rock stars from Indiana. He sort of has to address the Mellencamp question, and it feels more like a something that a politician has to like some music, and this seems more like the safer choice. Again, it's interesting that he picks country when this is a Republican ticket that is unusually un-country friendly for a Republican ticket.
Let me get some more callers in. We have Ed. Looks like Ed from Philadelphia joining us on Radio Times. Ed, go ahead. You're on the air. Do we have Ed? We will get Ed. No, we don't have Ed. Let me read what he said. Ronald Reagan used "born in the USA." He misquoted the meaning. And that was sort of a notorious thing, David. Do you want to add to that?
Oh, yeah. The conservative misunderstanding of "born in the USA" is just delightful. There's a sort of infamous George Will column where he went to see Springsteen and he said, you know, I don't know what these songs are about, but he's really pushing this very positive pro-American message. And I like that. And Reagan took up the same thing. So, you know, I think one thing that's interesting about the Kane pick is he seems to sort of be genuinely in you know, engaging with music. And for a lot of these guys, they're picking what they think on the surface seems like the right choice.
You know, I noticed, Rob, that, I mean, it seems like We Are the Champions, Queens, We Are the Champions shows up all the time. And I guess that they're just sort of the lucky ones that they get to, their music gets to be played in all sorts of venues. You want to speak to that?
It's that song, very, very, very strange when you consider Freddie Mercury and the utterly flamboyant life that he led. The people who embrace We Are the Champions, who would have no political common cause with Freddie Mercury whatsoever, has always been kind of remarkable and keeps getting more so.
And is it just that, I mean, I mentioned this earlier, that people just don't know the lyrics, or just somehow we give the lyrics a pass when it's a political season, Rob?
Well, I think part of it is more the general mood than the lyrics. You know, for instance, a few years ago, Sarah Palin was using Heart's Barracuda, which is a song that sets the mood that Sarah Palin wanted to project. As it turned out, Heart actually went to great lengths to prevent her from doing that because they were not on her side politically at all. But with some of these songs, like, it's just an entrance theme. It's something that sets a mood and a vibe without paying too much attention to the details or to the life of the artist who created it.
We were at the DNC reporting, or I should say broadcasting from the DNC, and I have to say one of the fun parts, David, was hearing Katy Perry and other people tuning up behind us as in the morning as they were getting ready to prepare for the event that night. And it was just extraordinary, the amount of time and effort and obviously money that went into making this all work out.
That's right. And I wasn't at the DNC, but I was at the RNC, and the house band there was led by G.E. Smith, the former Bob Dylan sideman and SNL band leader, who did that 4 years ago, too. And he said, you know, I don't really agree with these guys on politics, but hey, you know, they're paying me good money. I'm going to show up and play. It's what I do. I'm a professional.
Were there also some sort of songs that got snuck in the RNC that might have sent a different kind of message? Did I read that right, David?
Oh, that's ringing a bell, and I'm trying to remember what specifically there were. There was definitely some controversy over some of their choices.
Yeah, Rob, go ahead.
He did a David Bowie "Station to Station."
Yes.
I guess a tribute to the late, great David Bowie. A song, a 10-minute ode to cocaine psychosis and fascist fantasies.
Oh, my goodness.
A very strange song. You could see the footage on YouTube where they're playing this song, and the singer's going, it's not the side effects of the cocaine, and you could see the audience just kind of trying to take it all in.
Let me get Jake. Let me get Jake from Center City, Philadelphia, to join us. Hi, Jake. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm a teacher, and oftentimes we speak on how teachers often theme their teaching based on what they need themselves most. And so, in that sense, you know, I really feel like that you were talking about Trump's song, Southern Man, you know, the image he's conveying, like, it makes sense to me that he would choose something like that, kind of, you know, he's always kind of spinning around in a circle, trying to prove that he's not racist or a bigot. that's just kind of my take on it. It makes sense to me, at least with the Trump example, that he would choose something like that, kind of portraying the image he needs the most in his own campaign and as a person.
Well, and David, that I mean, that makes sense, doesn't it? That if there's any thought that goes into this, and it seems like some are much more focus group than others, that it is a way of sending a message.
I think that's exactly right. Yep.
Jake, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And you can call us as well. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We are talking about what's in the or what's on the playlist or in the iPod of various people running for office, whether it's President of the United States or Vice President of the United States. We also have some other elected officials' choices queued up as well. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Talking with Rob Sheffield, he's a columnist for Rolling Stone, and with David Graham, staff writer for The Atlantic. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Well, let's talk a little bit about President Obama's summer playlist. He had one for the day, one for the night. Let me start with you, David. What did you make of the sort of the overall picks that the president had? Do we have David? Nope. Do we have Rob?
Yeah.
Okay, Rob, what do you make of them?
Well, it's a fantastic playlist. Yes. It is talk about not focus grouped or stage managed.
Yep,
it's very hip selections in a hip-hop, R&B, soul, jazz, total very arty stuff and pretty obscure.
And pretty obscure. David, you're there as well. Do we have David? We still have Rob, though, right?
Yes.
Okay. Let me say the summer playlist, Love, Hate, Thing, Wale, which we're going to play, Smooth Sailing, Leon Bridges, Elevator Operator, Courtney Barnett, Home, Edward Sharpe, and the Magnetic Zeros. It goes on from there. He includes Charlie Mingus. So a really nice mix of songs there. I'll tell you what, let's play a Wale, Love, Hate, Thing. And this is the first song from President Obama's summer playlist.
Yeah, my affinity grows. It's cold. As you reach your goals, you gon' meet you some foes. Having dinner with Leonis's, I'm dreaming to own. But for now, me and my homies see the bottle float. I'm trying to redefine the culture, renovate the soul. Women in town, but I'm manifesting every goal. I see potential in John, talk to him once a week. Media targets in our city and this week. I lost a lot of friends, and they ain't even dead. When I was on my way up, why you ain't see the stairs? Lord Father, if I opted to follow them, my heart would tear for my dreams. Let me know that you here. And it's rare when I'm anywhere with too many heads. Jealous to never tell it until they stare. How could you blame us, envy? We do the same thing for a living, know the same. But they all come at me. Champagne, I'ma spill it till we all fill up. Maybe it stopped me from giving the about opinions. And probably not, but I'm temporarily out of since tell the post silly propaganda to politicians.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY. That's Wale, Love, Hate, Thing, the first song from President Obama's summer playlist. So, Rob, what's your analysis there?
Well, it's a playlist that would be incredibly impressive if it were a full-time DJ making this. I mean, there's some serious crate digging going on, and it's not politician-y seeming. I mean, even picking a Wale song is, you know, this isn't a top of the pops. And it's really an incredibly arty selection.
And we're going to talk about his nighttime list. But David, what do you make of his daytime list? And it does include, I should say, Aretha Franklin, Prince, Nina Simone, Common, Pharrell, Beach Boys, Gary Clark, Charles Mingus. It's a mixed bag there. What do you make of that, David?
Yeah, I was pretty impressed by this list. He's done lists in the past that seemed a little bit less innovative, but there are some really intriguing picks here. I think as Rob said, I think it's a fun one. I thought, you know, Wale is one that I kind of see. He's done some events at the White House. He's a DC guy, but seeing somebody like and Janelle Bonet is also a supporter, but seeing things like Common and seeing things like Mingus and seeing Gary Clark, I think, make it feel fairly personal and real.
And Rob, he's done this a couple of years running, coming up with his playlist. Does that move albums or songs?
It's definitely huge exposure, and for artists that are not necessarily in the public eye, it must be amazing for them, as a few of them have said, that the president is paying attention to what they're doing. And even for an artist like the Beach Boys' Good Vibrations, a song that everybody knows and loves, it takes on new meaning when it's in a very hip-hoppy, jazzy mix like this.
And again, that's Rob Sheffield, columnist for the Rolling Stone, joining us with David Graham. He's a staff writer for The Atlantic. And we are going through various elected officials' playlists, and currently talking about President Obama's playlist. We'll be talking about his ideas for nighttime after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, again talking with David Graham, staff writer for The Atlantic. He covers U.S. politics and culture. Also with us, Rob Sheffield, columnist for The Rolling Stone. And we've been playing playlists, and we've been talking about a number of different either elected officials or people running for office and the music that they say that they like. Let me read some of the titles that President Obama has on his playlist for nighttime, David, including Say Yes, Lean In, I Get Lonely, Do You Feel Me, My Funny Valentine, Lover Man, I'll Be There for You, You're All I Need, Green Aphrodisiac. What's the president trying to tell us?
I think the president is trying to tell us that he's in a sultry mood. People talk a lot about the Obama marriage as a model, and I think they're sending a message that it is as warm as it appears from the outside.
I wonder whether they're just saying there will be some private life for me sometime in the future. Rob, what do you make of that list?
Yes, it definitely has that thing. It's almost like a playlist that a dad would design on purpose to make his teenage daughters roll their eyes. You're completely mortified. Can you wait till we're out of the White House before you start putting on the Mary J. Blige and Method Man?
This is an interesting one. This is Majority Leader Paul Ryan. He says that his favorite band is Rage Against the Machine. We're going to play their 1992 self-titled album. It's called Killing in the Name. And let's give it a listen, and then we'll talk about it.
Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Killing in the name of. Killing in the name of. Now you do what they told you. 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 Now you're under control. Now you do what they told you. Now you're under control. Now you do what they told you. Now you're under control. And now you do what they told you. Now you're under control. And now you do what they told you. Now you're under control. And now you do what they told you. Now you're under control. And now you do what they told you. Now you're under control. And now you do what they told you. Won't you die or justify? But we're in the back. Justify those that died for wearing the badge. They get chosen white. Those who died are justified for wearing the badge. They get chosen white. They're justified.
That's Killing in the Name from Rage Against the Machine. Paul Ryan says that Rage is his favorite band. And David, knowing what he's been going through for the last week or so, do you think that song expresses his level of frustration and anger?
Well, he says he loves Metallica, too. I can imagine any number of harder things that he might be wanting to listen to. I don't know. I find those choices sort of endearing. You know, he says he likes Rage and he likes Metallica. He likes the Grateful Dead. And these are bands that are obviously not things you would associate with sort of staid, supply-side, economic wonks. And so it seems sort of genuine to me that he's fessing up to liking these bands who stand for rather opposite messages to his own political ideology.
Rob, they are, I guess, good workout. It is good workout music. And we know that he likes to work out. What do you make of that?
Yeah, Fleming, nice job picking a section of that song that's actually radio ready.
Yeah, we worked hard on that.
It's also a funny example of how a politician can choose music that is just, it's torture for the musicians to be associated with the politician, and for Rage, a band who have virtually no songs that aren't dedicated to overthrowing the Paul Ryans of the world. It's just, it's comical how, what a mismatch it is, and how painful it's been for them.
Well, in fact, let me play just a clip. This is Tom Morello discussing Paul Ryan's fandom, and this is on Real Time with Bill Maher.
Paul Ryan is a fan of Rage Against the Machine. Hitler was a vegan. What's your point?
Okay.
There's no litmus test for people being fans of music. And
would you do if Trump?
He's got the PX90 workout going to Rage Against the Machine. He's not really listening to the lyrics, is my suspicion.
Well, yeah, that's probably right. Yeah.
Well, that's sort of what we're talking about, right, David?
Exactly, yeah.
Let me read some comments that we have here. We have the tweet from Robin. Political rock. I found Obama's use of Springsteen's post 9/11 The Rising to be an inspiring choice, literally. Hashtag tears. Tweet from Sue. Remember when campaigns had songs written exclusively for the candidate? And an email from George. Funny, he likes Rage Against the Machine since he is the machine. An email from William. I do not come off as a heavy metal fan, but I absolutely love Metallica. Having diverse musical interests is a good thing. This may be my favorite piece of music that we picked out to play this hour. This goes back to 1987. Bernie Sanders, mayor of Burlington, Vermont, and he recorded back in 1987 for a folk reggae album, We Shall Overcome, and this is This Land Is Your Land.
As I went walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island.
Oh, that's so great. David, what do you I love that. What do you make of that? William Shatner, right?
Yeah, there are a lot of white guys who have made ill-advised reggae albums that I think might be the worst of them.
But it's so endearing, is it not? Even if it's bad,
I think he loves that message. He's into Woody. It's very heartfelt, and I think he was wise to stick with politics.
And wise to pick with politics, Rob. You're laughing. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's kind of that is perhaps the most Vermont audio snippet imaginable. But if you put it in a time capsule, so future generations would know what Vermont was like.
Well, apparently Bernie Sanders thought it was a gigantic mistake. He apparently wasn't happy about it. But then I read that he sang this song with Vampire Weekend right before the Iowa caucus. Rob?
Yeah, it's funny how for him, a guy who has no pretense to keeping up with pop culture, how he found it kind of amusing that he was embraced by so many musicians, and he's at his rallies this spring. He was always playing Bowie's Starman, and it was a song. It was hard to know whether he was actually really a Bowie fan or not. It doesn't seem like his kind of thing, but it just kind of beautifully captured the mood of his campaign.
Well, I think, David, that's sort of part of what makes it so interesting is some of these surprising choices, whether they're real choices or not, is a whole other question. But the fact that they are telling us a little bit about who they are.
Yeah, and they're telling us about who likes them and who their friends are. Even if Bernie doesn't, spend a lot of Vampire Weekend at home, he has a connection with these guys. They're out campaigning for him, and I think he appreciates that, and they appreciate him. And so you see these friendships growing in interesting ways, and I think there's a genuine bond often between the musicians and the candidates.
You can see that on stage?
you can see it on stage. I mean, you can see it in the way that, for example, Mitt Romney would hang out with Kid Rock at events. Not natural friends, I think, in the normal course of life. But they, you know, they seemed to get along when they were doing campaign events.
Well, we are talking about what some elected officials say they love, the music that they love, the musicians that they love. And again, you can join our conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join our conversation. And again, talking with David Graham and Rob Sheffield. Let me play another song. This is Senator Marco Rubio. He claims, this is NWA, he claims this is his favorite song, Straight Outta Compton.
Straight Outta Compton, crazy motherfucker named Ice Cube, from the gang called with attitudes. When I'm called off, I got a sawed off, squeeze the trigger and bodies are hauled off. You too, boy, if you with me, the police are gonna have to come and get me off your ass. That's how I'm going out, for the punk motherfucker that's showing out. About the mumble, they wanna rumble, makes a man
think that's more bleeps than we have ever used on a song on the air. Rob, it's just, how does that compute?
That is a very strange choice for Rubio. For someone who is a family values kind of conservative in, of all states, Florida, to be bumping Straight Outta Compton is a strange and bold statement.
And Eminem, he apparently likes Eminem as well. David, this is gangster rap, and it's Marco Rubio.
Yeah, Marco Rubio even says that he has an affiliation. He prefers West Coast rap to East Coast rap. So he seems to have a little bit of rounding it. On the other hand, he was asked to name his favorite member of the Wu-Tang Clan and could not name one, which brings into question a lot of his fandom here.
Oh, interesting, interesting. Let me just quickly reintroduce you, and that's David Graham and Rob Sheffield, and again, talking about some of the music that elected officials and politicians are like to listen to. It's on their playlist, on their iPod, excuse me, 1-888-477-9499, the number to join us, to call into the show and to join the conversation, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Well, we want to end things out with Chris Christie, and he has always said he loved Bruce Springsteen. They obviously have their political differences, and this is his favorite song, Thunder Road, from Springsteen's 1986 album, Born to Run.
Somehow, hey, what else can we do now except roll down the window?
And again, listening to Bruce Springsteen, Thunder Road. This hour may have just been an excuse to play a lot of music and music and to talk about why elected officials listen to it. But David, you know, we're not surprised by this. Christie has proclaimed his bromance for Bruce Springsteen for many years now.
That's right. And you know, for a long time, Springsteen wouldn't talk to Christie and wouldn't acknowledge him because of their politics. And after Hurricane Sandy, I believe President Obama actually brokered an introduction and put them on the phone together. And Christie said afterwards that he wept at having been able to talk to Springsteen.
So the love is real.
It really is real. He's been to dozens and dozens of shows. Somebody turned up comments on old internet message boards that appeared to be him getting really deep into the nitty gritty of Springsteen fandom. I think he's very much for real.
What do you think, Rob?
Yeah, when saw Springsteen in Jersey at MetLife Stadium a few weeks ago, and Chris Christie was there rocking out. Where else is he going to go?
You mentioned this, Rob, and I think we're all a bit scratching our heads, the fact that Bob Dylan got the Nobel Prize for Literature. As I said, I think a lot of people are trying to figure this out. I'm just curious, since it's part of the big news today having to do with music and a great big prize, of course. What do you think the Nobel people were telling us?
Well, I think it's Bob Dylan represents using songwriting in the American vein as a form of literary storytelling.
Does it surprise you?
It surprises me. I was looking at an article just last night, and it said the odds against Dylan were 50-1. I was rooting for John Ashbery, who was 100-1. But I love that it's Bob Dylan. It's funny because he's not a schmoozy type at all.
No, he's not. David, what do you make of that?
I hesitate to look into the minds of the committee, but I will say that during a campaign when there's been a major debate about what the correct parts of the American tradition are and when America was great, it seems fitting to honor somebody who represents so much of the American folk tradition and musical tradition.
Well, it's been so much fun. Thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. David Graham, nice to have you back.
Thank you.
And he's staff writer for The Atlantic, covers U.S. politics and culture. Rob Sheffield, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you so much. Great to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you as well. And again, columnist for Rolling Stone. He's got an upcoming book called On Bowie. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. And you can find out much more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show. Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Sign up for the newsletter. Listen to us on satellite radio. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thanks for joining us.